This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, Robin Down Producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We start our show today with Troy Hebert, the former state lawmaker, former head of alcohol and tobacco control, and he is a guy, of course, is from Southwest Louisiana, and now the two front runners in the governor's race are Sean Wilson, the Democrat from the Lafayette area. Dr. Wilson is the only Democrat of note in the field, and the leading Republican with the endorsement of the state party is Jeff Landry, the Attorney General, who was defeated by Troy Hebert in Landry's first run for office more than 15 years ago, and Landry lived to fight another day. And of the three candidates right now who are polling the highest, Wilson, Landry, and Stephen Wagasback, Landry's the only one who's ever won a race. And we're going to talk about the governor's election 28 weeks from Saturday. And if you're so inclined, we always enjoy hearing from the most enlightened audience in radio, 877-217-5757. But more than a few listeners have asked us to talk today about what happened in Nashville yesterday, another senseless mass killing, six slain in a school. The shooter, a 28-year-old former student killed at the scene, had detailed maps, had done surveillance. Three children, three adults at a Christian elementary school in Nashville were gunned down by an assailant armed with two assault-style weapons and a handgun after elaborately planning the massacre that took place at the Covenant School in Nashville, the latest in a series of mass shootings in a country that has grown increasingly unnerved by bloodshed in schools. If you'd like to comment on this, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, Troy Hebert, we did have a ban on assault weapons in this country in the 90s and up until it was sunset, and George Bush the second opted not to pursue a renewal of it. Is that something that's palatable, and would it be palatable for a candidate in Louisiana in a governor's race to make a case that we can have guns but not assault weapons? Is that off the mark, or is that a possibility?
Well, first of all, good morning, Jim, to you and your listeners, and thanks for having me. You know, my heart goes out, like most of us, to all the victims of anybody that's been killed by gun violence. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of the bumper sticker that guns don't kill people, people kill people. So whether or not, I want you to think about that, whether or not somebody is gunned down by a assault rifle, or they gunned down by a .22 used to kill squirrels, I mean, you're dead. And so I'm not really sure that it might maybe sound good to say, well, let's ban assault rifles. And I understand that seems to be the gun of choice for people. And maybe we get that from Hollywood, right? Because Rambo had an assault rifle. And so maybe the psyche ties those type of guns in. But I to answer your question directly, I don't see a gubernatorial candidate being successful that talks about banning guns and taking the rights away from people to own them and to protect themselves and their families.
Well, there is a distinction between banning guns and banning assault weapons, which, as we know, are much more efficient in killing people. And when someone is up to no good, they can knock out potentially hundreds of people in a short period of time. And I think that's the concern. And we're talking about children, of all people, being the people who are least deserving, if you will, of something like this. It's something that scars everybody who is present for the rest of their lives. A listener, Kyle on Corsi, just sent me this, saying that at a local gun dealership here in Baton Rouge, you can rent a submachine rental package for $39.95. It says offering submachine gun rentals and including two fully loaded magazines for the firearm that is selected for $39.95. Well, somebody who's up to no good could do that for $40, go out and take out a classroom or a restaurant, you name it. Does common sense at some point trump Second Amendment rights?
Well, I'm a big believer in common sense, but let's not take our eye off the ball. I understand that they could go to that pawn shop and do that, or that gun shop and do that, but they also can go in the closet and get their grandfather's double barrel shotgun. I mean, these crazy sick people are probably gonna find a way to get a gun, whatever type it is, and hurt or, and kill people. But let's not take our eye off the ball. And that is the fact that we have a society today with what I would consider mentally ill people that are choosing to find whatever. I mean, let's take a Europe, for example. Europe doesn't have guns. So guess what they do in Europe? They take a knife and they just go stab 10 people. And so, I mean, these people are sick. And we keep talking about guns. And I'm not saying that guns are not part of the problem according to some arguments. What I'm telling you is it's not the solution to take people's guns. Because, you know, at the end of the day is that what are we doing to just take these crazy people off of the street, or to try to help these crazy people to not be crazy and want to go kill people?
Well, we need to address mental illness. I'm not arguing with you on that.
That's not the buzzword right? The buzzword politically is guns.
Well,
it's not about mental illness.
And you mentioned Europe, but they don't have the kinds of mass shootings we do, and they don't have the murder rate that we do. Now, you can kill somebody with a knife. In fact, Jimmy Hoffa used to say, you go after a gun, you run from a knife. But knives are harder to kill mass deaths, and Europe does not have the same kind of issues we do in America. And I will concede that it has something to do with the American psyche, too. It's not just guns. And I'm not, I think anybody who believes in the Second Amendment believes that we should have the right to carry a weapon, but we have, we couldn't construct a nuclear bomb in our house either. We there are limits. Where do we draw the line? Rebel in Sherwood, you're on with Troy Hebert. Good morning, Rebel.
Hi, and thank you so much, Jim. And thank you, Mr. Hebert, for your completely disingenuous argument, sir. The statistics speak for themselves. We have the most guns in this country, and we have the most gun deaths. Guns are not making this country safer. They are killing us. Who do you hold responsible for all of these deaths? What political party is causing this carnage in America? And then you put the two together, like in this latest case with this school shooting, where we have the culture war coming into conflict with the guns.
All right. Well, I see where you're going, Rebel. And on Capitol Hill, the Republican Party is the party of guns at all costs. But let's see what Sean Wilson does. He's the Democratic candidate for governor. Is he going to take a position to ban assault weapons? Beto O'Rourke did it in Texas and got his butt whipped. John Bel Edwards certainly hasn't taken that position. And political consultants who may very well agree with Rebel say, look, if you want to win, you better stay away from this issue if you're in the Southeastern Conference. What do you think, Troy?
Well, first of all, if you outlaw guns, only outlaws are going to have guns. So let's just be realistic and to Rebel's, you know, some of his comments. I don't think gun violence is tied to one political party. I mean, violence happens across all spectrums of our society. It's not a particular political party. But again, that's the problem we have talking about parties, is that we don't work to find solutions. We work to find problems that tick people off and make them angry and stuff. And so, again, the buzzword for, let's just say, liberals is get rid of guns, okay? And then the buzzword for the conservatives is they're trying to take our guns. Neither one of those sayings solves the problems of all of these crazy shootings. And, you know, Jim, going back to your point, what I don't understand and I don't have the answer is why schools seem to be the place of choice for these crazy people to go kill our most innocent victims there is, which is our kids. So I'm a little confused about that part of it. I don't understand the psyche of that. And maybe it's because they think that there won't be any pushback, because I don't know of any anybody that wants to kill somebody that goes into a gun store and does a mass shooting in the gun store, because they're probably going to have customers in there that have guns on their side, and there's going to be a lot of pushback. So maybe the schools that they just deem to be a place where there won't be any pushback, and maybe we need to change that. I know there's an attempt to do that.
It's hard to put rationality into an irrational act. And when people go into schools or any place else, they're acting irrationally and irresponsibly.
Certainly.
It's a terrible tragedy. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions. How many school killers were convicted felons? And if the knife-wielding person in China would have had an AR-15, he would have killed way more people than he would have killed with just that knife.
All right. Well, most of these people have clean records, including the one yesterday. And that's a problem because sometimes there are obvious red flags. Other times they're not, Troy.
Well, they are, but I mean, you know, statistically, if you look, I'm sure there's going to probably be more people killed in Chicago this week than there is going to be killed at schools. So, I mean, there's violence all across the country, and you know, if somebody's kid is dead, they're dead.
All right, we do have to take a break. We'll return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Troy Hebert is our guest, and when we invited him yesterday, this man who was formerly the head of alcohol and tobacco control and a former state lawmaker, he didn't know we were going to be talking about this because this news broke after his invitation, but 6 are dead, 3 kids, a school in Nashville, 130 mass shootings in the U.S. through the first 3 months of this year, and we've got a few days to go. And Troy Hebert, by the way, for those who say that he's spouting the Republican line, well, he is not a Republican and never has been. He was a Democrat until 2010 when he beat Jeff Landry. He was a Democrat. And he's been an independent since. But as we know, he's a conservative. And he expresses a view that, whether you like it or not, is probably in the majority in Louisiana, that he believes that unfettered gun rights are the way to go. And in Louisiana, we treasure the Second Amendment, and my guess is that he is right, that not even Sean Wilson will call for a ban on assault weapons. Luke Mixon didn't in the Senate race last year, and neither did Gary Chambers. 877-217-5757. Avery in Donaldsonville. Avery, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Thank you, Jim. And Troy, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. I want to turn the Wayback Machine to your time on the Iberia Parish Council, and I was going to ask you, what did you learn about politics in your time?
All right, as far as your personal experience, you were a pretty good politician, and I think you're right about guns being a no-go for candidates running for governor if they want to win, but what did you learn? Sometimes you have to take a stand, even if it's unpopular and might cost you your job, Troy Hebert?
You do. Yeah, you do. And look, and I'll circle back to this governor's race and one of the reasons why Jeff Landry is very popular. I mean, I think people that send you to any office, whether it started off on the parish council like I did, which is kind of at the bottom, and worked my way up through several different offices, is that people want to know, number one, that you're fighting for them. Now, let's remember this, that today, unfortunately, the Republican Party, which I disagree with, they got what they call the purity test. And so if you're not totally pure, then in their mind, you're not qualified to hold office. And that is where I disconnect and why I can't be a Republican and I want to be an independent. And that is the fact that we can't all agree to go to Disney World this summer. We're not going to always agree. But to go back to the question of the call is that what I learned is people want to know that you're going to go into whatever body they send you and elect you to. Because remember, while you're over there serving, they're back home working to do or pay taxes or abide by all the rules you're passing. They want to know you're going to go fight for them. Now,
all right. We've got several people waiting in line. So please finish up, Troy.
Yeah, anyway, what I learned was, but you gotta fight smart. And fighting doesn't mean that you go tick off all of your colleagues and make everybody mad where you can't pass anything and you can't be effective. So right. That's the two lessons I learned.
Robert in Lafayette. Robert, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. I have two questions. One is, why don't we have universal background checks so that all the FBI and other law enforcement systems can be properly integrated? And it seems as though the more dangerous the weapon, the more stringent and strict our background checks with recurring
All right. What about background checks? Are you in favor of those? And should we get stronger background checks?
I'm for an effective, efficient background check policy. I mean, I think that's good common sense. That don't mean that I'm against guns. I just think that I am against crazy people having them.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to get under the wire with Troy Hebert. Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thanks, Jim. Troy, the assault weapon was banned for 10 years, and it was not renewed during, I think, the Bush administration. It should be banned again. And if it's not, and I've already consulted with one of the senators, one of our senators, then reduce the capacity. And thirdly, reduce the ability of an 18-year-old to buy one. Thank you very much.
All right. And the assailant yesterday was 28. So we do have laws, and of course you dealt with this in your capacity with alcohol and tobacco control. We do have limits. So when you're 18, you can't do certain things. You can't, for example, you're not supposed to be buying liquor, but you can still buy guns. Is that an appropriate thing?
Well, I'm not. I don't have enough knowledge about the psyche of an 18 or a 21 year old. There's arguments on both sides of that. What I am for, about talking about common sense, is let's just be consistent. If we're going to send a kid that's 18 years old and call him a kid and say he can't drink or whatever, but yet we're going to send him to war and give him a gun, we just have to be consistent. If 18 or 19 or 20, whatever that age is that the professionals deem that an individual should be mature enough, then let's do it that. But we can't say, okay, at this age you can do this, at that age you can do that. Mm-hmm. Let's just be consistent. That's
right.
My argument.
Peter in Mid-City. Peter, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Hi, I'm just wondering if you can address the fact that in Baton Rouge you can make person-to-person firearm sales without any background checks at all.
Yeah, you can do that at a gun show. Is that appropriate?
I don't see how you stop that. I mean, I'm for it. I understand the argument about that. But again, you know, listen, everything we're talking about, again, nobody talks about the mental illness problem that we have. Nobody talks about the person that's pulling the trigger. We're talking about the actual gun. You know, I mean, and it's kind of like when the plane crashes. When the plane crashes, we don't outlaw the planes. We try to train the pilots better. We try to train the mechanics better. Let's talk about the person pulling the trigger. But if you see your callers, we're not having that conversation, Jim.
All right. Richard in Pointe Coupee. Richard, you're on with Troy Hebert.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Jim and Troy. We need to be reasonable, common sense. We can treasure the Second Amendment. However, I don't believe we're allowed to own armor-piercing mortar, certainly nuclear weapons, certain machine guns. So why not the assault rifles? I mean, it's just crazy. We're outgunning the police.
All right. Does Richard make some cogent points, Troy Hebert?
My same point. Well, again, why aren't we talking about the person pulling the trigger? If you killed by an assault weapon, a 22 or a knife, you're dead. You're not more dead if you killed by one or the other.
Well, but you can kill more people, as noted, with an assault weapon quickly.
But let's do you. If you did the math on that again, Chicago's going to kill more people this week, Jim.
Yeah, Chicago's got like 7-8 million people. New Orleans and Baton Rouge have higher per capita murder rates than do Chicago. Does Chicago?
But if somebody's kid is dead, or they dead, and so let's talk about the person
pulling the trigger, committing the crime. Let's have fewer dead people. Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning.
Yes, I'm getting kind of tired of being a law-abiding citizen, being lumped in with the crazy people that do all these horrible things.
Well, if we didn't have people who did the wrong things, we could have as many weapons as we want. But as we know, we got people who are up to no good. John and Gonzalez. John, good morning. You're on with Troy. Hi, John.
I'd like to address what he said about not talking about mental illness. Every time one of these shootings happen, we talk about thoughts and prayers, and the very next thing people say, or the news says, is talk about mental illness. That's not true. Also, I'd like to address about what he said about the automatic weapons when you go and can rent one, that you can't leave the premises. They have a trained person right there with you. I've done that. That's not accurate.
Well, I didn't say that you could leave. I'm just saying you could rent it. And of course, if you're up to no good, once again, you can do things that you're not supposed to. Carol in Jefferson Terrace, you got to be quick. You're on with Troy. Hi, Carol.
Hey, yeah, I wanted to say the same thing about the mental illness. We talk about that every time. But I got a feeling if you were to ask most people, they don't think that you should be able to buy an AK with a bump stock.
Well, what about making this, sending it to a vote of the people? That would be fascinating in Louisiana. I bet it would be a close vote, Troy Hebert. Constitutional
vote of the people to what? Whether we want
to ban assault weapons. Ban assault weapons, not ban guns.
I don't think it'd be close at all. I don't think it'd be close at all.
Closer than you think. We'll be back a few more minutes with Troy. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. A few more minutes with Troy Hebert. 877-217-5757 is your number. And then we hear from the intrepid Jan Rischer, features editor at The Advocate. Joanne in Windermere. Joanne, you're on with Troy Hebert. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. Thank you, Jim, for offering us a forum in which to discuss all kinds of topics. But this morning, I want to just put out there something that I've wanted to say for many times and just haven't taken the time to do it. And that is that I'm a 77-year-old mother. I've raised two sons. I now have two grandchildren. And I'm thinking about the environment in which each of those generations were raised in. You are very hard-pressed today to look at something on television or to go to a movie and see something that is not full of violence and people killing each other. It's everywhere in the entertainment media, and I think that also contributes to the problem.
Thank you, Joanne. Troy, does she have a good point?
Well, out of all you callers, I agree with the grandmother and the mother the most. I mean, she's just good common sense, and I think the point she brings out is right on point. I'm so glad she said it, coming from her background of raising kids, that how difficult it must be, right, today when kids are bombarded. And, you know, the irony is you got all these woke liberal movie stars who film these movies in Hollywood that actually promotes. When you see these shooters, they dress like Rambo and all this other stuff. And she's right. So you're trying to raise your kid or your grandchild, mm-hmm. and then they stuck with video games that how many, I guess the score is how many people you can kill. And that's how you win the game. What do you think that does to the psyche of some young kid who's developing their brain at a young age where you see him playing games at 2 years old today, it seems like. Right. And so the point is well taken that she made. What do we do about it? I don't have that answer. Maybe she can come on and tell us what the answer is. But very, very good point.
I don't think Charlton Heston was a woke liberal. He was a pretty big star and killed a lot of people on the screen. We've got to be brief. But Chris in Opelousas, what's your question for Troy?
Well, I mean, why bother with guns, whatever? You can just use sanctions and drone strikes like the U.S. does. You can kill a lot more people that way. I mean, starve them. You know, I mean, they're all the people that we bomb at weddings and funerals in Iraq, and you can torture them. You can do all this other stuff. It's just, you know, U.S. foreign policy. You join the U.S. Congress.
All right, Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, you're on with Troy. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, Jim. Hello to your guest. I'm calling because I heard your guest saying that it was the liberals who were promoting violence in the movies. John Wayne and all the other movies in the Western period were about violence, too.
And John was, of course, a very conservative man. Stuart downtown.
But back in the day when there were John Wayne movies and Charles Heston movies, there wasn't that many school shootings. Well, they seem to be today.
Well, we didn't have assault weapons either. Stuart downtown. Well, Stuart, good morning. You're on with Troy.
Jim, Troy, audience, good morning. Mr. Hebert, what does one need with an assault rifle in a human society?
What is the purpose of an assault weapon? It's certainly not to hunt. Why do we need assault weapons?
Well, it's a gun. And so if you start outlawing guns, then what's next? Is the shotgun next? Is the pistol next? I mean, I just think, you know, a gun is a gun, and they are all capable of killing people. So the argument about distinguishing those, I don't think is a valid argument.
All right, final caller, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. What's your question, Phil?
Oh, good morning, sir. Please stop assaulting our
What's your question?
My question is, we are coming after you if you...
Well, all right, well, that's not a question. That's not a question. I'm sorry. We've got a friend from the Washington Post who provide us with guests every now and then, and obviously are listening to this show. I think they just had a poll that they're trying to send me right now about how Americans feel regarding guns. They just did the poll that came out yesterday, ironically, on the same day that this terrible tragedy occurred. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pull up the poll, but if I don't, then we will certainly convey this to you in the days to come, because it is an issue that is not going away, and it won't be the last, unfortunately, a mass shooting we have to deal with. But Troy Hebert, always a pleasure. Thanks for your candor, and let's keep talking. And my guess is that you believe, until further notice, that Jeff Landry is likely to be the next governor of Louisiana.
I think they're going to have to wake up very early to catch him.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, Jim, for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. We're joined now by Jan Rischer, features editor of the Baton Rouge Advocate. And she has been on the trail of Kim Mulkey all season. Kim Mulkey, who is probably the highest paid women's basketball coach in America, will go to the Final Four, LSU's first visit since 2008. LSU's been to five other Final Fours under the women's banner. In 1977, a listener notes, LSU finished second in the country, and that's true, but it was not an NCAA-sanctioned event then. That was with Julie Gross and Marie Jackson, the Australian greats who were brought here by Dale Brown to play for Jinx Coleman. But LSU did go to the Final Four 5 years in a row, three times under Pokey Chapman, once under Bob Starkey, who was the coach who replaced Pokey when Pokey was dismissed, and then once under Van Chancellor. And so those are the Final Four coaches, and now we have Kim Mulkey. And Friday night in Dallas, the Tigers will play Virginia Tech. And the town has gone bonkers over the women's basketball team, Jan. And you've been there. You could see it coming. And I must commend Kim Mulkey. The crowds have been magnificent. There have been a few sellouts. Sue Gunner only had one sellout in 22 years, and Kim looks like she may have sellouts for many, many years, and probably win a few national titles here. She won three at Baylor. I might guess she'll win a few here.
I think it's coming. I think they're going to do well Friday night against Virginia Tech, and you know, they're just fun to watch. If you're not watching them, check it out. It's real basketball. It's a talented team, lots of huge personalities, and, you know, I mean, Kim Mulkey herself is a study in contrast. So,
she is a showwoman, and her wardrobe, which you have noted duly as features editor in several features, is a spotlight, and she owns it. She likes the attention, doesn't she?
I don't know that she really likes the attention. She likes the attention for basketball. And she likes...
I think she likes it.
You think she likes it? Well, I mean, she doesn't reject it, does she? She keeps wearing them. But I think that, you know, it might be a vehicle to get more attention for basketball and women's basketball.
And her shoe collection is immense. You did a feature...
171 pair. I counted them personally.
171.
Well, that was a couple of months ago when I counted them. So she
high heels? Mostly high heels?
All of the dress shoes are at least 3 to 4 inch heels.
She was a great player. In fact, she played on two championship teams at Louisiana Tech as a player, and then two more as an assistant coach, and then three as a head coach at Baylor. So she already has seven national championships, but she's not a big person. She's got a lot of moxie.
I think she's 5'4". She also at Hammond High led her team to four state championships.
I know.
So, you know, deep Louisiana roots. She gets Louisiana for sure.
And I'm amazed that LSU did not hire her before now. She actually wanted this job, coveted it, didn't get it until late in her career. But she could go on for a long time, especially with the adulation as Howard Cosell. Can you feel the adulation? She's getting lots of that. And at the airport, there were people greeting them, right?
Well, you know, their plane got delayed. They ended up not there. I think people went to, when they were expected around 12:30, but Sunday night they got delayed and were on the tarmac in South Carolina for 3 hours and didn't get here until almost 4 a.m.
Well, Kim Mulkey is going to be around, and I don't know if they'll win the national championship this year, but I suspect they will soon, maybe next year. South Carolina beat them, one of their two losses. They're in the Final Four. And South Carolina looks to be the heavy favorite. They'll play Iowa. LSU goes against Virginia Tech, and we'll see what happens. But as we know, basketball, and that's one of the beauties of the men's tournament and the women's tournament, is that surprises can happen. And Kim's got her team on a roll, and there will be a lot of people following them to Dallas, Texas.
The team itself is just fun. I don't know how closely you've watched them, but Angel Reese is a ton of fun to watch. Flage Johnson with her rapping career and her positive messages. And then Alexis Morris. Man, that girl, she's got some serious heart. And last year, Poa. I mean, there's
so many. Have you always been such a fan?
Oh, I was a basketball star in my own right, if I do say so myself.
And your dad was a coach?
My dad was a football coach.
But still, a coach is a coach is a coach. So you have that athletic background. But you were a guard, weren't you?
I was a point guard.
Yeah, like Kim.
You know, they run the floor.
That's right. They run the show. And and Jan came to Baton Rouge by way of Lafayette, and she's been kind of running the show. She gets lots of attention. And we look forward to having her on frequently. And the only woman who's gotten more attention than Kim Mulkey, I think, is Trina Edwards.
Two people who I've done my Baton Rouge Classic lunches with. They're both interesting women. I mean, why not talk to the interesting people,
right? Well, will you be going to Trina's wedding on the 1st of June?
I don't know that I'll be going to Trina's wedding, but I would be happy to go to Trina's wedding. She's having some fun. You know, the interesting thing about both of those women is I don't believe that either of them understands how interested, I mean, they know people are interested in them. They're smart women, but they have an interesting relationship with the attention that they've garnered.
Yeah. And in Trina's case, she's gotten some unwanted attention. I think the Spanish Town event was largely about her, but she owned it.
She thought it was hysterical. You know, it didn't bother her. It didn't bother her at all. So she's fun. Well, both of these women have good senses of humor.
Well, and I think to a point, we all enjoy it, but sometimes we might fake it a little bit too. But Trina is one who got lots of attention when she married Edwin Washington Edwards, who was 51 years her senior. And now she's cut it down to 35 years with John Ilario. And we'll talk more with Jan Rischer after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Jan Rischer, features editor of the Baton Rouge Advocate. And then it's Marjorie Engel with a compelling book, Sorry, 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 The Case for Good Apologies. But Kim Mulkey, Baton Rouge and LSU, they become the Mulkey Way Galaxy with Kim Mulkey leading the charge. Her Tigers are in the Final Four. And are two wins away from the first national championship for basketball of any kind at LSU. And Kim was right. 22 years and Sue Gunner never went to a Final Four. And she's in a Final Four in her second year. Pokey Chatman did it 3 times in 4 years and was headed to another one when she was fired unceremoniously. So it would have been 4 for 4 for Pokey, who until further notice is the greatest basketball coach in the history of LSU. But Kim Mulkey will likely be here a while. She's got a big contract. And a listener noted that they say, in fact, this is a member of the LSU board, $750,000 to renovate her office. So Kim gets what she wants, but she's producing. And when you win, baby, nobody cares.
You can wear whatever you want. Even pink feathers down your sleeves.
Yeah, and she's doing it in grand style. You think they'll win?
I think they'll win Friday night. And, you know, South Carolina, you know, who knows? Iowa is hot. They could give South Carolina a run for their money, and that could be a really interesting game. But South Carolina is tough.
Well, Jan has become a remarkable reporter. Some of her stories are the most read in the newspaper. And she's versatile because she's become largely a beat writer about women's basketball. And to give you an example, we've had a few editors of Tiger Rag during my tenure as the proprietor. And I had one a few years ago who I asked him to cover like a Bingo Bells event. And he said, I didn't come here to be a features writer, to be a society writer. That's how he put it, to be a society writer. Well, there's nothing wrong with writing about society, and people love to see their pictures and their names in the newspaper and in magazines. There's nothing wrong with that. What's the big deal? But some people are purists. They believe they should only cover the games.
I have very strong feelings about that, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I
want
to hear them.
Sports, I think part of the reason we like sports so much is that it is a metaphor for the human condition. And I don't know if you read the story I wrote Sunday about Alexis Morris, but that was not so much a sports story as it was a human story. And this is about a girl who has overcome unbelievable difficulties. And she's triumphed. So, yeah, tell the human story. I'm all about that.
Well, if they win the national title, we want to bring you back next week. But are you going to Dallas?
I am not going to Dallas.
You're not going to Dallas?
Yeah. I would, that would be fun, but we've got the real sports writers going to Dallas.
And Sundays, you can read Jan in a new realm. Not so new now, but it's a new concept. I like it. Tell us more.
So Louisiana Inspired, we started it last August, and it is in every Sunday's paper. And it is about people who are and organizations who are working towards solutions. So we have Q&As. We feature people all over the state and what they're trying to do to make the world a better place, which is something I'm pretty passionate about. And there we go.
Well, congrats on your success, and let's keep talking.
Thanks so much.
Jan Risher of The Advocate. Our guest now is Marjorie Engel, and her book is Sorry, 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 The Case for Good Apologies. An insightful, some might say hilarious, illuminating exploration of apologies, why they matter, and the healing power of the words, I'm sorry. And Marjorie, as you know, and you write about it, a bad apology is worse than no apology at all. Why is it so hard for people to say they're sorry when they're wrong?
Well, first, thanks for having me. And yeah, it's really hard to say you're sorry because your brain is not designed to let you do it. Our brains are designed to help us see ourselves as the hero of our own story. We have to be a good guy. And to apologize, you have to apologize well. You have to acknowledge that you are the bad guy in somebody else's story. And it means being vulnerable. It means putting yourself in a one-down position. And so it's really hard to do. I mean, it's easy to make fun of bad apologies, but when we're the one in the hot seat, it's hard. However, I do want to say that I would like Kim Mulkey to apologize to me personally for that jacket.
and I doubt that she would do it, but hey.
Somehow, yeah, I think you might be right.
Well, what about people, and you cover all the types of apologies or non-apology apologies. What about people who say, I'm sorry, but? Is that really an apology?
Sorry.
Or I'm sorry if. I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings. Is that really an apology?
Right. Exactly. I'm sorry you're such a snowflake. all of those. We know. We recognize, we viscerally, our shoulders go up. We stiffen because we know that we're not getting a good apology when somebody says, sorry if, sorry but, sorry you. If it's a public apology, you hear the word alleged. you hear context. You hear obviously, you hear regrettable. And these are all words that tell you that the person isn't really taking responsibility. And taking responsibility is at the heart of a good apology.
Taking responsibility. Why is that so hard to do?
Because we don't want to. It sucks to acknowledge that, we did a really bad thing and we caused hurt. So sometimes it's good, even though we live in this culture where everybody is supposed to respond to everything right away and social media is urging everyone to not sit with a thing for even a second. Sometimes it's good to just sit when somebody tells you that you've offended them and maybe do a little reality check with a close friend and take some time to formulate the apology that actually, because sometimes when we sit with things, we realize, oh, you know what? I really did screw up here.
Sorry, sorry, sorry. The Case for Good Apologies from Marjorie Engel. Her co-writer is Susan McCarthy. It's a big book with lots of compelling ideas. And here's an example. Don't demand apologies when you're in a state of rage. Never use apologies to humiliate kids or pit family members against each other. And here's an important one. Ask yourself if there really needs to be an audience other than the one being apologized to. Those sound like common sense things, but for some, they probably haven't given it much thought.
Yeah, and a lot of us didn't see good apologies modeled for us when we were kids, right? We knew we saw our parents fight, and then, you know, we held on to our sibling, and we were like, oh, they're going to get divorced. And then suddenly the next day, everything was fine. And we didn't see the process of making things right. And it's really important to teach kids to do it, so they will teach their kids to do it. And all in all, we end up with a more kind and humane and forgiving society.
Now, a listener asked the question, and by golly, we've got the right answer for you about do you address apologies from government officials? And yes, you do, and for governments themselves. And here's an example of some vile political apologies. Bill Clinton in 2018, interviewed by CNN's Craig Melvin. Craig asked him, have you apologized to Monica Lewinsky? And the former president said, I've apologized to everyone in the world. That wasn't a very good answer.
Except for one person. Yeah, because he hadn't apologized to a certain one person in the world. A problem with public apologies is that people often, that the official or their team often forgets that you also have to apologize privately. Because what happened, say, remember that incident in United Airlines a few years ago where they dragged the elderly doctor off a plane screaming and he broke his face? And, you know, they said after a bunch of really bad corporate apologies that said, you know, we regret the overbook situation. Yeah, that's not the problem here. They said that they apologized to his family. And of course, his family right away is like, yeah, no, they didn't. So on the good and the bad of social media is that people are accountable now.
Well, you talk about...
But again,
go ahead.
I was going to say, thinking about Clinton, though, when he apologized for the Tuskegee experiment, which was a horrible, a horrible chapter in American history, that was a really good apology. So when it's not him personally, he actually did a better job than many leaders of countries at apologizing for institutional, you know, for historical wrongs. It was just his own wrong where he had this blind spot.
I remember I grew up in Little Rock 10 years, and I was there when he was elected to his first office as Attorney General. And when he ran for governor in 1978, he was 32 and he won. And then he was defeated in 1980 when he was 34. They had two-year terms. He comes back 2 years later and he was not the favorite. But he won by apologizing, and whether it was sincere or not, he made people believe it was sincere. He's, I messed up my first term, and I'm asking for your forgiveness. And
it, wow. Oh, my God. You missed your calling as an impersonator.
It worked. It worked. But the Lewinsky thing is so personal, and I'm sure he's thinking, oh, my God, my wife's watching, my daughter's watching. Why are we going here all these years later? He was probably really ticked off at the guy who asked him the question.
Right.
Go ahead.
Feelings are never wrong. We like to say that, first of all, you're allowed to feel whatever it is you feel. It's what comes out of your mouth that matters. And one of the things that we like to say is that intention matters less than impact. You know, sometimes our intentions really are good. And even our intentions to apologize well are good. But in the heat of the moment, we just can't do it. And the thing that we did wrong, it's really hard to own that. Just because I didn't mean for this to happen. Well, it happened. How are you going to deal with it?
Great book. Sorry, Sorry, Sorry. Even goes into how we should accept apologies. We shouldn't say no biggie. Thank you, Marjorie Engel. Signature support from First Financial.